This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. Since 1988, Whitetail Institute has been perfecting annual and perennial seed products specifically for hunters who plant food plots. Their seeds have been engineered to be palatable, high in protein, and extremely attractive to deer. Whether you live in the Deep South or Midwest farm country, they have products that will help you grow your best food plot yet. For more information about their seeds and their blends, visit whitetailinstitute.com. Enter the discount code SE15 for 15% off.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Spring break isn't what it used to be. It's better. This spring, stay 3 nights and get a $50 Best Western gift card. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Visit bestwestern.com for complete terms and conditions.
Welcome to the Huntivore Podcast, powered by Sportsman's Empire, where we celebrate the hunting and fishing lifestyle through the utilization and consumption of our wild game. No egos.
Fork in hand, beer in the other.
No status.
A piece of red meat on a hot grill and turn it into a burnt offering.
Just catch it, cut it, cook it.
Well, hey folks, beautiful evening here in Michigan. I gotta be straight with you. I had a hiccup at the recording of this episode. I joined Jacob Fetter for a conversation online and was having all kinds of network issues. We powered through and we got it done, only for me to find the first part was unusable. But the show must go on. I am publishing the quality part of this episode because of its great content. So let me catch you up to speed. Jacob recently left working for John Deere dealership to pursue his passion of archery by opening up an archery shop of his own in Hillsdale, Michigan. His archery love also extends to his kids, who keep him busy with events and lots of equipment tuning. At this moment when we pick it up, I'm trying to ask Jacob, how should I focus my practice here as summer cools into fall? Let's tune in. Best part about rural Michigan, you can get away from people. It's not crowded, but the service sucks. And here I am trying to record with a guest and do a long conversation. But anyway, back to what we were saying is like shooting at those hours at the end, getting some practice in shooting arrows. One thing, you know, I've kind of worked with a couple different thought processes when I'm out practicing. Sometimes it's I really want to get the tightest group possible where I'm trying to work on my body, on my shooting form. There's other times where I go out there and I want to really focus on just putting the pin in a very specific spot because I want to see if there's something with the bow. So again, you know, again, I'm trying to do the same thing with my body every single time. And I want to see if there's something wrong with the arrow or the bow. And then there's other times where I just, there's no thinking to it, where I'm just flinging arrows down range as guys are getting back out into, or, you know, they're going through their own processes in their backyard, or they're trying to do some different stuff at other ranges. What should be a big focus point? And I know it's probably very particular depending on the archer, but if I'm going to go through sound practice, if I want to really have purposeful practice, what am I wanting to focus on when I'm out there with my bag target, or I'm at the line shooting at a piece of paper or a 3D target? What do I really want to be focusing on?
Yeah. So it's a few different things there. So like when I'm out shooting at a bag target or, let's start with a bag target or a 3D target. I'm shooting for tight groups, or, if I'm close distance, I'll shoot at different spots so that I don't break an arrow. But yeah, if I'm like, shooting at 90 yards yesterday, I was just trying to get the absolute tightest group at 90 yards I could possibly get. And I could fit them all on a, like a dessert pie plate. Cause that's what I shoot at that distance, so I can actually see it. But, for a bag target in the backyard, tight groups or shooting at spot. A lot of the times, if I'm trying to find out if there's a problem with a bow or a problem with my form or my release, if I'm looking for a problem with my form or my release, I'm shooting at blank bail, close distance, 10 feet. And I'm just focusing on the process, the shot execution. If I'm looking for a problem with the bow, I'm taking measurements of the rest or taking measurements of the sight, and I'm shooting through paper. I'm looking for a tear. I'm trying to get a bullet hole. If you can shoot a bullet hole through paper, you know, that bow is tuned for that arrow. It should be good. You should be able to throw a fixed blade broadhead on it, and it should broadhead tune fairly easy. So there's a few different things there. And yeah, if I'm out in the backyard, I'm trying to get as tight a group as I possibly can.
So. Gotcha. I like how you broke that down too. Like I kind of just threw, I tried to make it as an open-ended question as I could. And I liked what you said is like, you can go in the backyard and shoot for the tightest group, but then at the same time, if you're looking to focus on something different, it's not you changing the backyard. It's you changing the target or the specific thing that you're going for. Like, much like you said, going for closer distance into the blank bail, if it's going to be for form. That way, you know, you're not wasting the long walks back and forth. If you know, picking out a certain thing, and then even getting down to the nitty gritty of having, the ability to shoot through paper. I know a lot of guys, like, I mean, you've got a shop where you've got the proper tools to go with. And me coming from the farming industry where I just got to make something happen. I'm using the box that I bought my bow out of, and I cut two holes in that box, and I can put a copy piece of paper on one side, and then I have the back hole so that the arrow can fly through and then go into my target. So I can do it in my garage and be able to shoot through paper. But going through those little steps, even if it's using the box that the bow came in, going through all those little steps and really tuning things up really gives the archer the confidence. I was talking to somebody the other day, and they laughed at the term that I was talking about marrying, that I'm marrying the arrow to the bow. And then I'm marrying the bow to myself in the fact that, you know, it, maybe it's in that same term of like two become one, but it's more than just saying, hey, this matches this. It's gone together. They're made to be together. And so by going through those three components, being the archer, me holding it, the bow, and then the arrow, ultimately, if those are all married together, just like you said, each stage of your practice, be it from paper, then to blank bail, then to actually shooting tight groups, you're going to come out of there with a far less anxious shot. Am I right? Yes.
Absolutely. And building confidence. If you can, you know, if you can tighten those groups up at long distance by working on your form and having the proper setup, your confidence level at 40 yards and in is very good. So,
yeah, that 40 yard mark, that's really like a pinnacle line here, at least here in Michigan. You're going to get some of those lazy does that walk out into the bean field, head down very comfortable, where you can take those longer shots or off a food plot. Yep. And then there's also then the high tents where they're 10 feet underneath you. Now you've got to make that shot calculation.
Oh yeah. Yep.
So as I was mentioning earlier, we've got a mutual friend, through AG, our good buddy, Tyler, the redhead that everybody loves. He was talking to me about how, you know, you were in two different camps. You were working with tractors, working with ag, and then you finally got a chance to jump into the shop. This is the first year that you've put together the physical storefront. Am I right down there in Hillsdale?
Yep. We started Feather Archery back in 2021. Started acquiring some tools, learning very quickly, you know, if you want good tools, you're going to have to spend good money on them. Cheap tools.
Buy ones, cry ones sort of thing.
Yeah, that's right. I'm on my third bow press now.
Oh, my goodness.
The first two just did not work as I thought they would. So just a learning thing. But, yeah, so we started Feather Archery back in 2021. I've been working for the John Deere dealer 13 years at that point in time, and just started working out of the pole barn. It was all word of mouth. There was no advertising. It was just people knew I was working on bows for the kids because they shoot target archery, and they'd want a new set of strings. Yep, I can do that for you. And when we would get done, when we put on a set of strings, have that customer shoot it through paper, make sure everything was tuned. Take an hour to shoot with that customer after the string install and make sure everything was good. They were happy. They'd tell somebody else. Then they'd reach out, and it was just kind of some word of mouth growth, less than $10,000 a year in revenue, but it was good learning. And then, yes, August 30th of 2024, we opened the storefront. So almost a year now, and it has grown very quickly. We still try to put a very quality experience in front of the customers, and that is resonating very well. I'm learning very quickly in the first year that I have to change the layout of the way I put things together, because I still want to provide that very high quality customer experience. But I need to be more efficient. Otherwise, I will not be able to get enough customers through the door. So, a lot of learning. Love it so far. I did not expect to be full-time at the store within the first year. But it definitely was going to have to become that. There was no way I was going to be able to do both and go through a 2025 harvest and a 2025 fall at the archery shop both and still have a marriage or any of that sort of stuff. So
absolutely. Well, I'm glad that like your anxiety or like doubts or whatever you've got have been silenced just because of you're busy. You're having guys come in the door and you've got bows to work on. Like, you know, it helps be wanted, helps to be needed. So that is awesome. And I think Jude, as again, hunting is in it. You always hear like there's less hunters in the woods, but at the same time, I want to say that the people that are still in the woods, those folks are looking for helpful people to help them with their bows. Or if they haven't, you know, for my point exactly, I'm going to do probably 90% of the work on my bow. I'm going to make all these little adjustments and little tunes. And then when I've really screwed it up, I don't mind spending a lot of money to come see you, Jacob. Yeah. Because at that point, I've exhausted everything that I've gone through, or I've completely wrecked it, and now it needs someone with a doctorate to figure out what's going on with my bow. Yeah. But how has your training gone with, like, as new bow, as bow companies continue to put out new product? I have one of the Prime Blacks, and so that was where they had this funky string and cam system where it comes down and I've got it, it comes off of a double cam and then comes together in a single string. It's really a kind of an odd setup. How are you going about making sure that you know that, hey, this next model, I got to be ready for this type of setup?
Yeah, it's, so now I'm blessed. I have the support of my reps from Hoyt, Elite, and all those guys, or Outdoor Group. So when that new product comes out, they're more than helpful in saying, hey, here's the new technology. Here's a little bit on it and how you should attack certain issues. Or then reaching out to the companies directly, Hoyt, Elite, so on and so forth, and talking to them. So I can gain some education there, some experience as the products come through the door, or I get that first one and just tear it apart and look at it, whatever it takes, you know, shoot it. In the past, it was a lot of what you talked about. Hey, I'm just going to work on this and I'm going to figure it out. And when I fail, now I'm going to figure out how to fix it. and so I enjoy when a customer comes through the door and asks me questions. I will give them whatever information they need on whether it's building their first dozen arrows, whether it's, you know, I want to be able to sell bow presses, last chance presses in my shop. So that if a customer wants a last chance press, they can put their hands on it before they buy it, you know? And that way they can do some work in their garage. And if they need help, or they need some advice, I can give it to them. I didn't have that when I started. I relied a lot on YouTube. There was a local shop down in Ohio that the boys shoot for their team. They were very helpful. But I enjoy seeing people work on the equipment and learn something new. The chance of them staying in the sport if they learn it is really high, and I want everyone to enjoy it and stay with this sport of archery. So
I actually got into I got a grant through the state of Michigan and through NASP, National Archery in Schools program. And so they hooked us up with some bows, so I get my third and fourth graders through my gym class get a chance to come in, and we work strictly on the sport of archery at that point. We've got a, you know, big old bale targets that are out there. They've hooked us up with the Matthew Genesis bows, some Easton arrows, and they've been it's just great to have that equipment, to have these kids stand in the line. And you know, it's fun at first because they're like, is it going to make a big noise? Is there going to be some loud bang? And it's like, actually, no, there's going to be, the only thing you're going to hear is the arrow hitting the bag on the other side. And so to have them release their first arrow, first off, we got to teach them how to hold the bow, how to hold their body. What's their eye dominance? I try to take them through those steps to be prepared to be able to pull back these bows. I love how they can go down to like 7 pounds. Cause even a lot of kids at 7 pounds are like, oh my gosh, I can't get, cause they've never pulled anything like that before.
Yeah, no, I totally get that. I was a NASP instructor a couple of years ago, for the local school. Went through the NASP certification. That was a great program. I love the thought of NASP and making it a, like, you can't have the after school program if you don't implement it in the PE class. Mm-hmm. So that every child has access to this. That's a great part of NASP.
Were you doing the competition side with NASP? Were you getting into doing the shoots?
Yeah, we didn't end up doing any competitions in that first year. And I was still working Green Mark and trying to do the feather archery thing. That was before we had the building, but there was just a huge time constraint and I had to pass it on to someone else. So, but I was there that first year helping get it started. And yeah, it's really enjoyable. I love that part of NASP.
Yes. Yes. I was with third and fourth graders. Were you in the middle school then? Is that where you get, where yeah, so you were starting?
Middle school, high school. It was a after school program. I was not the PE teacher. So the PE teachers handled that part of it. And then I was just doing the after school stuff.
Okay. Gotcha. Gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're on the PE side of it. Because I'm in the elementary school, like we do. Yeah. Yep. 3 weeks of archery and then it's kind of done. But I push the kids to different stuff that if they're really interested, like where they can get a bow. Mm-hmm. If they need help setting it up, you know, bring it to class. I'll help you set it up. But we haven't been able to get through the after school part or even like the competition side. I know when I did take my training, we were down there in Portage. Was it Portage Northern that has a really big, I think that's where the one of the directors teaches at. And so anyway, we went down there and learned. That's where I got my cert, was through Portage. But anyway, that was a neat experience. And just how even like, you know, you'll have a kid have an experience with a bow like that, but then someone who is still getting into the sport, even as an adult, will have those same experiences as far as, you know, how do I hold my body? What does it feel like to pull back this bow and to be able to do that?
Yeah. I got my certification in Portage as well. I've since let my NASP lapse. I don't retain that one. I am a USA archery instructor. So level 2 USA archery. So we're actually doing, starting in July and now through August, we have USA archery instruction, or basic archery instruction here. And we just started last week a class of 4 students. I believe the oldest is 7. Youngest is 4 or 5. That is an interesting class. That's the first time I've had that many young students at that age in the same class. And if I can make it through it, it's going to be a good learning experience for me as well.
So. Yeah, it's a different animal, especially when they're that young.
Yeah.
So what is the goals of like a level 1 USA archer? Like, what are the goal and objectives that you're looking to give to these students? I mean, obviously there's going to be some proficiency that they're going to be getting into, but like what, when they walk out of that class, what are you looking for them to be, to have?
Yeah. So the entry level beginner archery class is just being proficient with the bow. So the first class we do is range whistle commands, range safety, the shooting lines on the range, targets, target wall, target line, all of the aspects of archery that make it safe, because we don't want anyone to get hurt. So we go through all of that, as well as this is the recurve bow. These are the components of the recurve bow. This is a compound, the components of a compound. So on and so forth through all of it. And then we get into pretend shooting with an elastic band to kind of get that form down before they pick up the bow the first time. And then once they get to shooting a target, we start out close distance with no target faces. We're just working on foam and trying not to hit the drywall. We're just trying to hit foam. And then every week we can add just one more thing, you know, first week, maybe just figuring out how to raise the bow properly, so we don't sky draw or we don't draw the bow back aiming at our foot, you know, and just work from there. And once we get through that 6-week course, then we can move them to an intermediate or advanced class where we can fine tune or have them do specific drills for an hour on their stance or their anchor position, their release technique. Where one student may be working on their release technique for an hour and the other one may be working on their balance for an hour. So that's what we're trying to get out of it, or have those students get out of it.
Yeah. And this is all, as especially when you're getting to that level one, level two, like these kids are motivated. These kids are really looking for, you know, this is a sport. This is the competition that they're looking forward to, that as a hunter, my, I guess the competition, it's really not a competition. It's, I want to put this in the right place to have that animal fall over within eyesight. That's really what I'm wanting to have happen. Mm-hmm. And it's one shot, one done. You know, it's the cold shot mentality where I get one shot out of a hunt, versus when you get into on the competition side, it's very much that same, like each arrow counts, but at the same time, you're shooting multiple arrows that also have to count. That mental fatigue is huge. And especially for a kid that's got to remember where to put my feet. How do I, where's my anchor point? Am I looking at the pin or am I should be looking at the target? What's my float going to look like? Like all these different aspects. Even though you're not running a marathon, I'm sure coming off that line, dude, you're smoked. You're just done.
Yeah. My youngest, Connor, he ended up winning the national S3DA Eastern Shooter of the Year last year in his age and barebow division, which was an amazing, amazing feat for him. We decided last year in 24 that we were going to go to all three national tournaments. So we went to the first one, which was indoor, and he got on the podium. So then we went to the 3D tournament, the national 3D tournament, and he got on the podium again. So then we got a hold of the state coordinator and we're like, okay, I really don't have enough vacation time or money. I need to know where he's sitting before we decide whether or not we're going to go to the third one. And they're like, yeah, he's sitting in like third place. Oh, okay. So we're going to have to go. So we went to the third, the outdoor target on the Eastern Nationals. And like you say, that preparation, he shoots with 7 arrows in his quiver when he shoots an outdoor target event. And that mental cue is, when I have 1 arrow left in my quiver, I'm done shooting my 6. He doesn't count 6 arrows when he's shooting. He sees 1 arrow and he's done shooting. So when he shot the first scored end on the second day, he was sitting in third place and he shot until he had 1 arrow left. But when he got out of when he put his equipment together, he grabbed 8 arrows instead of 7.
Oh.
So he shot 7 arrows instead of 6. They took the 2 highest points away. So he shot 2 9s. They took them both away. So he dropped 18 points in the first end of the second day. He shot his way back to first place that morning.
Oh my goodness.
Took shooter of the year. And it came down to a 1 arrow shoot off closest to center. So all of the money, all of the time that it took to get there, it was worth every penny and every second to do it because it was the best thing ever to watch. So
to crawl back from 18 points taken from you for a mental hiccup and then to have it come down to millimeters at that point.
Yeah. There's this thing where they say it a lot of times when they're watching, when barebow shooting, which is just a stick and a string, basically anything can happen in barebow. And yeah, that's exactly what happened that day. Because if you were to drop 18 points in a compound event, it's very hard to crawl back from that because of how precise the equipment is in that division.
So, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There's that consistency factor, whereas, you know, there's all those like little, there's the stabilizer, everything that's on the string. And you know, like, just like you said, there's all these different aids to help yep. take you out of the equation versus the bare bow where you are a big factor of that equation.
Right. Yep. Especially mentally.
I haven't picked up my compound. It's out of the box. We have pulled the string back. We've done some work with it this summer. But mainly I've been using my longbow. I got really, really excited a couple years ago with some friends that really wanted to get into the traditional side of archery. So yeah, it's not a bare bow where it's a metal riser, but I picked up a longbow, and like, I think I do have more, I think I enjoy the practice with that more because it is one of those things where I really have to focus in. Whereas mm-hmm. I still have to focus in with my compound. But again, like in that equation, there's so many things taking me out of the equation, making it more precise, finding ways that the arrow isn't impeded by me, where then that turntable right. comes around, just like with your son, where he needs to now make sure that he's shooting the same time, or excuse me, the same way every time. Whereas I think I'm still growing in that. I've heard it's like throwing a baseball. Once you figure that out, you get your arc down and you know, you don't nearly have to think about it, but an hour will melt away. And then I'll feel it in my back and I'll feel it in my arm, how tired I am after shooting something without any aids, without any mm-hmm. way to take me out of the equation. And yeah, that's just a ton of work. Are you seeing folks trying to take on that same thing? I know like, yeah, there's the camps are growing, whether it goes from compound to crossbow, to longbow, recurve. Are you still seeing that trend go up higher, even in the, you know, the bare bow and traditional side?
Yeah, we work on a fair amount of traditional archery, see it come through the door, stock a lot of arrows, and then, you know, talk to guys about how to build arrows. Would you build arrows differently for traditional archery versus a compound archer, which is enjoyable. So we're seeing some guys that are going from compound and picking up some trad bows, but we're also seeing some youth archers that have spent a few years, their younger years, shooting a crossbow and making that jump at 9, 10, 11 years old into their first compound bow to go after a whitetail. And that's truly, truly enjoyable to see those youth archers that have, you know, been successful with a crossbow now making that jump into the compound bow world.
Yeah, not shying away from the challenge.
That's right. Accepting it. They, you know, you put that first compound bow in their hand, they go out, they shoot a few arrows back in the range with it, and man, they hit the bullseye a couple of times and the eyes are wide open and the smiles are from ear to ear. So it's truly enjoyable.
That's neat. That's neat.
Dry aged steaks used to be a steakhouse-only indulgence. An old-world charcuterie was pricey due to being imported or created at a small batch-specific scale. Thanks to UmiDry, their synthetic dry aging bags and casings allow you to create these meat-crafting treats in your own kitchen. Working in tandem with your fridge, the UmiDry bag material allows moisture and air to pass through, making it possible to dry age large cuts of steaks or roasts. Paired with their curing and seasoning kits, along with safe and easy to follow instructions, salamis and dry sausage are well within your grasp. Use the link in the show notes and sign up for the newsletter to receive 10% off your order. UmiDry, helping us elevate our wild game from the home kitchen.
Hunters, listen up. If you're tired of struggling to hoist up your deer or big game after a successful hunt, it's time to upgrade to the TIBOS Block and Tackle. With its self-locking mechanism, you can easily lift up to 300 pounds by yourself without the need to tie off to anything. Just pull the rope and it locks in place. Made in America and backed by a lifetime warranty, Tie Boss is my go-to tool for all my hoisting and tying down needs. Check out the link in the show notes or head over to tieboss.com. Well, Jacob, my whole emphasis, I got in late to hunting as an adult. So got out of college, got my first job, and then it was like, all right, I'm gonna try this hunting thing. My whole focus was meat acquisition. I really felt at home just where I live, the proximity of shoot, anything I want to put on my plate, anything that I want to put on my family's table is very close. There's a lot of produce producers just in the area of Michigan that we're in. There is dairies. There are cattle operations. I know the locations of different slaughterhouses if I wanted to get in contact with a different grower or rancher. And then in the fact living on a poultry farm, all that just seemed to mix that it was like, I want to put the best stuff on my plate. I want to put the best stuff on my family's table. And I took that jump into hunting in the fact that if I want something local, what's more local than something out my back door? What's something mm-hmm. more local than something that not only eats, you know, the food or the feed that's already out there in the fields, but also grazes naturally on the landscape? That really seemed exciting to me. So getting in and putting venison on my family's table has been probably one of the biggest influential things as far as keeping our freezers full. You know, I've always got poultry, but then to add in some red meat was really, really helpful. Mm-hmm. And that's where my passion really goes with that. When you're out there and you end up bagging your deer, or your kids end up eventually putting down their deer, what's the process that you go through as far as bringing it to your table? Are you guys using a processor that you've really honed out, or are you taking on that challenge of breaking it down yourself?
I have been very fortunate. My dad taught us at a young age the value of being able to process your own game, and that's all game: squirrels, rabbits, pheasants back in the day, and then deer. So when one of my boys or I, when we get a deer, we take it to dad's house. He's got the equipment and it's a family affair. Everybody gets involved and we get it done, and it's enjoyable. It's time to spend with the family, you know, and then, you know, life lessons are learned. Now with three boys, our venison is not very exciting. Most of it goes into the ground for, you know, hamburger helper, chili, what have you.
Yeah.
The loins, are you into 2 pounds get set aside
for taco night or for spaghetti? We're into 2 pounds. Is that where you guys are living too?
Yeah, we're in the 2 pound market as well. We've got three boys that are now almost all teenagers. So yeah, it's, we go through 2 pounds now. So.
Oh my goodness. So you're grinding a lot of it. What's a couple of the holdbacks? You know, yeah, it's not exciting per that you take it, other than the whole acquisition piece of it. But what are those pieces that, I mean, yeah, we know the backstrap. I'm sure you're going to tell us about that, but what's another piece that gets held back as a whole cut?
Oh, you know, we'll actually do a venison roast every once in a while. Yep. And throw them in the slow cooker. They cook all day while we're at the shop and enjoy them, whether they're slow cooked with some onions or cream of mushroom soup or whatever it is, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But aside from that, we switch game and we go to like turkey or squirrel, something like, I got my youngest loves squirrel hunting. So we get out to the woods and we'll shoot some tree rats and he just loves it. We got him a little 22 to make it a fun game for him, but a little, I would almost call it a precision rifle, but it's, you know, it's not a precision rifle. It's a 22, and he likes to go out there and shoot squirrels in the fall. So we'll throw those in the slow cooker or cook them in the oven.
Yeah, that's our, I would say that's our late season jam, is just walking around shooting squirrels out of trees. That's, yeah. And then, yeah, like coming home and just doing like, yeah, the fried squirrel seems to be their favorite.
Yeah. Yeah. Turkey. So, I have smoked a wild turkey breast before and that was pretty good. But actually I had a customer, we started selling, High Mountain seasonings here and had a customer this spring bring in or grab a turkey jerky kit from High Mountain Seasonings. And he brought in some turkey breast jerky that was pretty darn good. I think if we weren't successful this spring, but I think if we're successful next year, I think we're going to do a turkey jerky kit as well. So that was pretty good. So.
Oh yeah. There, nothing could go better than some white meat jerky off that. That would be good. I haven't tried the High Mountain jerky kit. That might have to be something I delve into. Yep. Yeah. I recently got, like, just with the amount of sandwiches that we put together, if you've seen the price of roast beef from the grocery store, absolutely insane.
My lovely wife does all of the grocery shopping, so I try not to pay attention to it.
I every once in a while I swing by that deli counter just to see what's going on. It's like $12 to $15 a pound.
Oh my goodness.
For roast beef. Now, oh my. I think it's like the boar's head. I think it's like the, you know, a little bit better stuff, but I'm like, are you kidding me? Like $15 for a pound of meat to put on sandwiches? That wouldn't last my family a week. And that would be like, we're going on Oregon Trail, hit the ration button type sandwiches. Like I like a tall sandwich.
Mm-hmm. And it's got to have some meat on it.
Oh yeah. And so I've started to do, I just use a slicing knife and I try to slice it as thin as I can, but I've been, brining and then either smoking and roasting or just, you know, straight roasting, a large cut, be it from the leg, top round. The last one I just did was sirloins. But slicing that thin for sandwiches and the amount of effort, like you have to put a little bit of the cooking effort into it. But at the same time, like I'm getting a sandwich that I could eat every single day. And because I'm not trying to buy new archery equipment every year. And, you know, with each year that I'm using the stuff from last year, not buying new camo and stuff like that, the price is starting to go down a little bit. You know, I'm starting to get on the cheap side of being able to make some roast venison sandwiches that would rival anything that that Boar's Head could put out. And it's just, you get that medium rare sirloin, you give it a brine, maybe inject it. I did a dry rub, goes on the smoker just to add some smoke to it. And I get that temperature up to right around that medium rare side of it, rest it, put it in the fridge till it's cold. And then it stands up to being able to slice that. Shoot, man, a little bit of mustard, maybe some horseradish. That's all you need on that thing. But it's like, look at the savings there. Look at what you take responsibility of what goes on your plate and look at that savings that you're going to get automatically. Not only is it local, not only do you know where everything came from and what you put into it, but shoot, man, you could put that on repeat. You got three boys that are out there gunning for deer. You're putting four deer, I imagine, down, four or five or so. That's a lot of sandwich meat you can make.
Oh, yeah. That sounds delicious. We definitely should try that.
And that's just a matter of, you know what, taking a little extra time, not going super fast with a nice long blade knife, but shoot, mm-hmm. man, just slicing that thin. That's,
yep.
You know, and I'm not all about just, you know, saving money is kind of a, you know, it's a fun perk on the side of it, because it does feel like sometimes when it comes to hunting, like you're always buying new, you're always buying the latest, the greatest, something new, exciting. But to then come back and be like, you know what, I just put two deer in the freezer. That's, you know, that's a couple hundred pounds of beef that I don't have to procure and buy at a retail price. And, you know, if I didn't put those deer down, yeah, I've got the ability to go to a rancher and buy, you know, half a cow or a quarter cow or whatever I want to do. But again, to be able to procure that myself, put it away. And even on your end where you're cutting it up yourself and you see that whole process lay in front of you, just like you said, it's a big family event. You know, everybody gets together, everybody enjoys it. It's a thing that you look forward to. And then every time when you pull a package out, you get to talk about it again.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so true. And the boys, they even, you know, they know when it's the deer they've shot, when they're getting in the freezer, they're like, oh yeah, that's the one that came from my deer. Yeah.
Well, does that become a thing? They're like, no, it's my turn. It's my turn to be a part of dinner tonight.
Yeah, that's right. So which it's good that they enjoy it. I mean, they started out with hunting, and then they started doing target archery, and then that transitioned into archery hunting, and then which there was not before they started shooting target archery. We didn't go out during October. That's when we were running beans.
Yeah.
It was busy at Green Mart or the John Deere dealer. So it was just, that was not a time of year where I spent a lot of time in the woods. And then once they got really into it, it's like, nope, I need to make time to be in the woods with them in October. And we truly enjoy it. And then when they're successful, yeah, it resonates. Like it sticks with them. So.
Yep. I'm about two steps behind you in that whole thing. My son actually was really interested in it. He's 12 right now. He's dabbled. They have a bow that they shoot with me, but like they haven't taken that huge interest, quite yet, but again, they're young. Mm-hmm. They're into soccer right now. They're into wrestling. So there's stuff that they're doing. They'll find a way to be busy. But at the same time, every time I do get a deer, it comes down like, hey, we want to go hang out with dad. We want to go drink pop and cut meat. So like that's the fun thing that we've turned that into. And I think just like you were saying, like one step at a time, their interest in hunting, they're going to say, I want to hunt. And then at that point, it opens the door for, okay, well, what's our implement? What are we looking to do? So we're trying to open up as many doors as possible. But yeah, I'm excited for when they really truly pick up that bow and be like, okay, I want to hunt with it. Well, let's practice first.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I will say in the last few years we've transitioned away from as much rifle or during gun season hunting. I haven't shot a deer in years because I'm trying to get the boys on one. So whenever I'm out there with a bow, I've always got one of the boys with me, and I won't take a long shot just to take away from the opportunity to potentially get that deer in the 20 yards for one of the boys to shoot it. So, I take my equipment out there, but I get just as much enjoyment out of watching them either be successful or attempt at being successful. So, and a couple years ago, we let my oldest hunt by himself. He'd gotten his hunter safety and it was time. So I dropped him off at a blind early in the morning. My other boy and I went to another blind and I told my oldest, if you get one, just come get me. I said, and if you want to wait a while and leave him lay, do that. And it was shortly there after daylight broke, he comes walking over to my blind, and our hunting for the day was over. But we went over there, and the first yearling that walked by him, that was his first bow kill. And I told him, I said, if you want to fill tags, and he, the first yearling that gave him an opportunity, he smoked it. So it was good for him to get some practice on actually shooting a deer by himself and be successful.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I love that. I love that whole story, Jacob, where you send him off and you give him the, hey, if you shoot one, either come get me or stay there, but we'll take care of it after, and have him come up and be like, I made my own decisions, and now we have to go take care of it. That's so cool.
Yeah. It's really enjoyable. So,
well, Jacob, I appreciate all the time that you've given us today to just chat about shoot archery and all that goes into it. That, you know, it's one of those things, like, as you get into one thing, you might think, hey, I want to get into hunting with a bow, but then it opens up so many of these doors, because then it becomes a competition, it becomes a challenge, and it becomes something you continue to strive for. As much as I got into this whole thing just to procure meat, here I am having a different arrow and a different sight for wanting to shoot foam and wanting to shoot paper and having the chance to be shooting at distances that people 20 years ago wouldn't even believe it. And here we are becoming proficient in this sport of archery. So, Jacob, tell us a little bit first, as you know, before I send us on out, where can my listeners, especially if they're in the Michigan area, where can they find you? How can they get connected with you in there to help them out with their bow?
Yeah. So we are Feather Archery, a relatively new pro shop down in Hillsdale County, Michigan. We are on the south end of Hillsdale. We have an indoor range and ever-changing inventory of bows. It seems like we go on runs where we can't keep enough of them in stock, and then we sit on them for a while, and then we go on runs again. But so that's the physical location, is in Hillsdale, Michigan. Online, we do have featherarchery.com. The majority of our products can be purchased there. We'll ship them out. I think everything over $99 is free shipping right now. We've got apparel, all of the accessories. A lot of the flagship bows we cannot ship. You can purchase them online, but we cannot ship them. You have to come to the store to pick them up. And then we're on most social media platforms, Facebook, Instagram, X. And then I do have a YouTube channel, Feather Archery, where I'm uploading some educational content, some technique content, maybe some equipment setup content. Just trying to, it's a lot of how I learned was watching John Dudley and MFJJ and all those guys on YouTube. And, you know, I put my own spin on it and re-deliver it. And what are some of the things I've seen? I put it on a video and send it. So,
well, perfect. I'm going to be sneaking into that inventory here soon enough. But yeah, hold on just a second, Jacob. I'm going to let everybody on out here. Folks, I hope you enjoyed this this conversation. I hope you've gotten so excited about not just archery hunting, which if you haven't got your bow out, you should definitely do that now. But at the same time, taking that the further next step, making this something of an activity, making this something of a competition that you do, where it's not, you're just not shooting during the months of October and November, but you're actually taking it and shooting year round for the enjoyment, for the ability to get better at it and to really fine tune your equipment. Because as you do that, you're going to need a pro shop to go to, and Jacob's going to be able to help you with that. But whether you're going to be choosing to go bare bow and not have any help, or if you're going to go compound, make sure the broadhead you are using is very sharp.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.